All right, Friday night on the Fan pregame. The gang is back together to wrap up this week. Good to be with you. Thanks for all the people that filled in or helped out over the last few days, eh?
Yeah,
you're a lone wolf, but you did great.
Carried me through, that's for sure.
We got a loaded show again today to wrap up the week. Jeff Passan in a moment here. Arash Madani from the Grey Cup that kicking off this weekend. And then Frank Saravelli at 6:30 to send us into the weekend. But the man of the hour, who's hopefully going to give us lots to mull over the weekend, joins us right off the top. Jeff Passan from ESPN. Jeff, appreciate you jumping on. How are you?
I'm great, guys. How are you?
We're good. We're working through the Blue Jays. I guess, you know, we saw a couple quotes.
It's been a long process, working through the Blue
we're
Jays.
We're working through the Toronto Blue Jays. And I know
normally people pay like $100 an hour.
Yes.
And they're trying to work through the Blue Jays.
Yeah. We're hoping that you'll help us with it.
Well, you did help us a little bit, Jeff, because we were listening to the Baseball Barbie cast a little earlier. And you said, quote, this has the chance to be the best winter for the Blue Jays, for Blue Jays fans, or the absolute worst. And we asked ourselves after you said it, how could it be worse than last year when we thought we had Shohei Ohtani for a second and we ended up with Isaiah Kiner-Falefa?
I hope there aren't any reports of planes flying with people on them this winter.
Yeah.
Just because you get like, you had a great run as an organization in the early 1990s. And that wasn't all that long ago. It feels like forever ago. But I speak as someone from Cleveland, Ohio, when I say like sports fans can survive longer and worse droughts. But when you get teased like last year, and the prospect of the tease of Juan Soto coming again, it's just heart-wrenching all winter long for Blue Jays fans. But, man, it's exciting when it's going on, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Keeping us on our toes, for sure. So let's talk about the best-case scenario, and I think that would be obviously to get Juan Soto or somebody of a really high caliber that the Blue Jays are swinging for, but obviously Juan Soto would be number one. In your recent discussions and trying to figure out where the Juan Soto sweepstakes are, you know, the wind is blowing that day, where do you think the Blue Jays stand in terms of his comfortability with maybe being a Blue Jay, what they can offer, and what the other teams might be putting up against the Blue Jays to make Juan Soto maybe a real case scenario for Blue Jays fans?
I'm just going to be completely honest with you guys right now. I don't know the answer to that question yet.
Okay.
And the reason I don't know is because I don't think Juan Soto is going to know truly what his priorities are until he's met with each of the teams and heard what they have to say. And that actually has something to compare to something else. And, you know, you never know until the moment happens what is going to compel you to want to go somewhere. So I think he's in that right now. But, yeah, money's going to really matter. And if the Blue Jays or any team comes in with the high contract offer, that is the biggest chip that you can put in. You can't change your proximity to the Dominican Republic. You can't really change your roster. You know, there's not a lot that you can change about those fundamental elements of the organization, which is why money tends to end up winning the day. So I think that at the end is what it will probably come down to. But if the offers are close, you know, then we're going to really see those secondary factors and how much Juan Soto is going to consider them.
I am fascinated. I'm sure, you know, people in baseball are too, of the Blue Jays situation, in that they are truly boom or bust, at least it seems. Like, if the high-end special edition Lamborghini is on the market, they seem to want to be involved. But otherwise, they'll just grab the Prius. Is there any precedent for a baseball team, you know, conducting themselves in the way it seems the Blue Jays have been or are planning to do again after what we saw last year and reports that, yeah, Juan Soto is definitely someone they're going after, but don't expect them to blow the budget otherwise?
It's interesting the way you frame that, because correct me if I'm wrong, but I got sort of a negative connotation out of that. Is that fair to say?
Well, slightly. I mean, I admire the fact that they're going after these guys, but like, the clock's ticking on Vlad, Bo.
No doubt.
A window is closing as we speak. Why not just put a competitive baseball team out there if you can't get that Lamborghini?
Yeah, that was a question that should have been asked 2 years ago, because it's totally fair, right? And I think they look at the money that they didn't spend and suggest that it could be spent going forward on Lamborghini caliber players, because at the end of the day, even though you pay them the most money, they're the best bets. Like, the best players in baseball who end up going to free agency get enormous contracts. And, you want the best players, because not just because they're the best players, right? But because you can count on them every year for a high floor and for a baseline that is just so much better than your average or replacement level major league player, that those are guys you can actually count on. And so in terms of the strategy, either get stars or scrubs, either get stars or go young or have some combination of both. It's actually a pretty familiar thing throughout baseball. I think the Jays are just a little bit more conservative than most teams when it comes to those mid-level free agents. And I think that has a lot to do with what Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins learned in Cleveland, where they didn't have much of a budget and where they knew that if you sign a mid-level guy like Michael Bourne or Nick Swisher, that doesn't work out. You are torpedoing yourself. And I think there's a little bit of like leftover executive trauma from that has suggested to them or ingrained in them that, you know, we're just not going to play in that mid-level free agent necessarily, because those are the ones that tend to have the most volatility. And those are the ones that can really blow up in your face. Now, is that the right thing to do? There's a really reasonable argument that it is, but there is an equally reasonable argument that it's not. And I think what we've seen over the last couple of years is the manifestation of where that has gone wrong.
We're talking to Jeff Passan of ESPN. I think that maybe that mindset is what makes Blue Jays fans feel a little bit anxious when it feels like swinging for the fences or not even coming to the ballpark.
And to that point, I'm sorry to interrupt. To that point, though, I think it's really reasonable for Blue Jays fans to say, you know, if we're not the Yankees or we're not the Dodgers or we're not this destination that's quite as attractive to free agents as these other organizations might be, should we be putting as much stock into those level and that caliber of player as we are when it's all said and done, the likelihood of someone going there may not be as great as the organization is calculating? Like, that to me is the fairest way to put it. Like, what are our chances of getting a Lamborghini, or are we just fourth on the wait list?
What about having someone like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. signed long-term, locked up as a part of your future? Does that help maybe to land a Lamborghini or whatever's next in line, knowing that you could play with Vlad and that this franchise is committing big money to keeping him around and keeping him as the face of the franchise? Like, how important do you think that is right now for the Blue Jays to have solidified, if they're talking about Juan Soto, or even if it's not Juan Soto, when it's somebody of a really high caliber as well, having Vladdy's future solidified, I think would help.
Yeah. Let's put it this way. I don't think it'll hurt. I don't know in practice how much it actually helps get guys, maybe get them across the finish line. Like, I see it in Kansas City here, right? I live in Kansas City, and Bobby Witt Jr. signed here this year, and he's going to be around for the next decade. And so people like him, and he's super good, and they want to play with him. And so I think there is something to that extent. But, man, when you're talking a free agent the caliber of Soto, it's attractive and it's alluring, but he also could go to the Yankees and play with Aaron Judge, or, you know, he could go to the Mets and play with Francisco Lindor, or go to the Red Sox and play with Rafael Devers. Like, there are attractive guys on good teams, and I'm not sure having Vladdy locked in long-term distinguishes or separates them to guys of Soto's caliber quite the same that it does somebody a little bit further down in the pecking order.
Yeah, that is true. But, like, if not the case, if they don't have plans for Vladdy, if they don't plan on following up, potentially signing Soto with signing Vlad, like, what is the sales pitch? I mean, if you're Juan Soto, like, you got to have some assurances that the Blue Jays have some things in place, because if Vladdy just – the deal just expires and Vladdy walks – and Soto might just want the biggest bag of cash. That might just be his bag. But, like, it feels like we got to learn something about intent just through these meetings, no?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I also think, like, if you're looking at team building, that there's an argument to make that putting, you know, $35 or $40 million a year in the pocket of a first baseman, which is what I think we probably all think Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is right now, may not be something that you want to do, or may not be something that's ultimately prudent. He's such a good hitter that maybe all of it's moot, and you're just buying the bat and accepting the defense. But at the same time, like, if you're the Jays, having upward of $1 billion tied up in two guys with little defensive value, they sure better hit. And you sure better construct the right sort of team around them that their hitting advantages you, but their defense disadvantages you.
We're going to shift over to ask you a little bit about some of the other free agents. It's a pretty interesting offseason. Roky Sasaki is someone that looks like it's going to be posted, is going to come over. Obviously, the timeline's a little bit different, and his projection as a bit of a younger guy. I just wonder what you think he wants, because I've seen some different reporting about he actually wants to go somewhere where he can be developed well. He wants to go somewhere that maybe there is a Japanese connection or that is closer. Like, what do we know about what he wants in his future in the MLB and what teams might be at the forefront of providing him that wish list?
I've heard so much mixed stuff on this, and you know, there's a game that goes on while free agencies like this happen, where, you know, somebody says that he wants this because it's advantageous to them. I mean, you can look at what the Dodgers have, and they have shown with Shohei Ohtani and Yoshinobu Yamamoto that if you're a Japanese player, you can be the biggest star in the game here, and you're going to have people traveling around the world to see you, and that could be alluring. You know, Yu Darvish, who's in San Diego right now, is taking on a mentorship role for Sasaki, and the notion of spending a few years with him to help transition into the big leagues is an attractive proposition. You know, you've seen Seiya Suzuki succeed in Chicago, and Toronto's a really exciting, just straight up city. Like, I think baseball players acknowledge Toronto is a super cool, fun, enjoyable city that has all of the things that New York and Los Angeles do with half the hassles. So that's the sales pitch from the Blue Jays. And, you know, in the same way that Soto's doing his little dating game right now, Sasaki's is going to be, you know, that times five, because every single team wants him, and every single team can afford him, and every single team will gladly get rid of all of its international commitments if that means signing him. And so whatever it takes to get Roky Sasaki, he is the biggest bargain in baseball. And teams are going to give their absolute best sales pitches to try and get him.
Last one for you, Jeff. So there's many outcomes, obviously, for the Blue Jays. Maybe it's Soto. Maybe it's the next best. Maybe they don't have the contingency plans in place like they've had in previous off seasons here. But part of the bad news seems that the Red Sox are aiming to be the Red Sox again in terms of going out there and being forces in free agency. What are you hearing about what are you hearing about what they're trying to do?
There's a lot of overlap between the Red Sox and the Blue Jays this offseason. The Red Sox are going for Juan Soto. The Red Sox are going for Max Fried. Like, the big ticket items, they're in there. And it's just, like, I like that this is an off season where it's not just the Yankees and the Mets and the Dodgers, but teams like the Jays and like the Red Sox, who should be in the mix for the best players in baseball every year. So, you know, as much frustration as there might be with the Blue Jays in Toronto and the surrounding areas and all of Canada, Red Sox Nation is not happy at this point either, because they have in recent years spent even less than the Blue Jays. So now seems to be the time that they're going to be aggressive. And, you know, as much as this notion that I thought was going to be the case of New York versus New York driving the Juan Soto market, the presence of the Red Sox and the Jays throws a real wrinkle into that. Like, they both really want the guy, and they understand in order to rip him away from New York, whether it's Steve Cohen's money or the Yankees having a year head start and getting to know him and go to the World Series with him, the Red Sox and the Jays, if we want to take them seriously, they're going to have to show just how serious they are.
Well, the relationship between Blue Jays fans and Red Sox fans will be it's always a fun, spicy one, and I'm sure if they're bidding after the same people this offseason, it'll be fun when the Red Sox come to town. Jeff, we appreciate your time on a Friday night. Looking forward to seeing how the MLB free agency kind of shakes out, so appreciate you giving us some updates, and we'll chat soon. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, guys. Take care.
It's Jeff Passan of ESPN. Ben Nicholson-Smith sending out a tweet moments ago. Source tells me and Shai Davidi that the Blue Jays are set to hire David Bell as VP of Baseball Ops and Assistant General Manager.
Yeah, looks like it.
Okay.
We'll have to read up on David Bell.
Is he the former Reds manager that I thought maybe David Bell? But we'll have to do a little research on David Bell.
We'll get some news. We'll get some news in the break. Yeah.
Okay, great. Let's bring in Arash Madani of Sportsnet. We're just flying across the country here for the 111th Grey Cup. Arash, how are you? Thanks for coming on.
How are we doing, everybody?
We're doing well. You have escaped the Toronto swiftiness for a little Grey Cup action.
Unless you're a fan.
I sure did. I don't need to be anywhere near south of King or between Bathurst and Yonge anytime soon.
Well, I am right in the mix of it, and it's something to witness. All right, so let's talk about the rematch from two seasons ago, setting the stage for the 111th Grey Cup. What's different this time? Like, what is the biggest, when you're waxing poetically about these two teams, like, what is the biggest sticking point for you about the different scenario that we're going to see on Sunday for the Grey Cup?
It's that the Argos starting quarterback was basically without a job for 100 days in this, you know, CFL season, from the start of free agency in mid-May until the second week of training camp. Like, nine teams could have had him. Nine teams passed on him. And it was only because Chad Kelly got suspended for nine games that Nick Arbuckle was even signed. And he goes from basically unwanted on the scrap heap to starting in the Grey Cup on Sunday. Like, this is a dude who had not taken practice with the first team offense since week two of last year when he was in Ottawa. And it's all happening for him this week.
So how much then does that diminish potentially the game? Because, you know, the Argos win the East final mainly on the back of Chad Kelly, who goes down late in that game. We see Nick Arbuckle, but we haven't really seen Nick Arbuckle. This is a 9.5-point spread, I think, last I checked. How much does this quarterback change affect the competitiveness here for Toronto?
I mean, everything. But it'd be if Kansas City went into the Super Bowl with Carson Wentz, not Patrick Mahomes.
They'd still find a way, though, those Chiefs, you know?
Yeah, I bet. What would the flag disparity be then?
Great.
So what does that mean? It means a few things. One, it means the path to victory for Toronto has to come via special teams and defense predominantly, which they actually may have the edge in. Like, Janarian Grant, their returner, he's got in 11 playoff games, he's got three returns for touchdowns. He averages a kick return touchdown once every 4.75 game. So they can win in the kicking game. Their defense is really good. It's really strong. And they're actually, they're driven to turn the ball over. Like, when I was talking to some of the Bomber players today, the vets, they're like, these guys just, they almost let you catch the ball only because they want to rip the ball out of you. So ball control and turnover ratio will be significant. I mean, it's an Argos defense that forced six turnovers on Montreal last week. So those two things. Then obviously running the football, and this is where it gets intriguing, guys, because Winnipeg's defense has a three-man front, and they drop nine in coverage. And one of the Argos' strengths is running the football with Kadeem Carey. So what they've done there with Arbuckle at the helm, like, my read on it is that every game with Chad Kelly, with the regular starter, they'll have like 70, 75 plays in their game plan. They're shaving it down to around 40 for Arbuckle. Just so, hey, just make the main thing the main thing. Don't try and do too much. kind of be dialed into what we have to do here. And so that's kind of the approach that the Argonauts are taking in all this.
So how devastating then, and how would it shape the legacy of the Blue Bombers in a fifth straight Grey Cup, a dynastic run, but let's say they can't, you know, they can't win a game where they're 9.5-point favorites. They lose for the third time in a row in a Grey Cup, twice to the Argos, to a backup quarterback. Would it change the way we feel about this run for Winnipeg?
Probably, losing three in a row is never good. But the Blue Bombers are a really good football team. And what's really changed the last 4 or 5 weeks with them is when you kind of watch the first 20 or so plays, and usually those are the scripted plays on the call sheet, the majority of the time, they're running RPOs. And they're doing the run-pass option with the best player and the best running back and the best Canadian in the league in Brady Oliveira. And then, you know, Zach Caleros is playing really good football the last few weeks. Matter of fact, there are a lot of people you talk to around the league that say Zach in the last, you know, month or so is playing as good a football as he has in his career. So, you know, I just kind of look at this whole Winnipeg situation. You know, usually by Friday afternoon, the hay's in the barn, guys are going off to having dinner with their families, et cetera. I was talking to Pat Neufeld, their veteran O-lineman today, and he said, actually, this morning before we came out here, Zach sat down with the O-line, and we were kind of going through film and just really kind of tightening up some details here. Like, this feels like kind of the last dance maybe for this Blue Bombers group, and they're leaving nothing to chance.
Last one for you, Rash. Sorry, we don't have too much time tonight. You're covering the final Randy Ambrosi Grey Cup. The realities of his tenure for you are what?
Overpromise, underdeliver. Only pro league in North America that didn't have a season in 2020. Vowed to have a 10th team in the league on the East Coast. It didn't happen. Some of the basic things that you need to operate as just a basic league, like having a functional stat system, not able to pull off. A lot of messaging and a lot of talking and not a lot of results. That's how I would characterize it.
Well, you're missing out on Taylor Swift, but you're getting the Jonas Brothers. So it's, you know,
it's a good trade,
it's 2008 all over again, Rash. Enjoy.
I prefer Green Day last year.
That's pretty.
That was
fun.
Pretty good.
I'll give
Ambrosi that. If he had his fingerprints on that one, I'll give it to him.
Oh, that's good. Rash, we'll enjoy. Looking forward to seeing all your coverage of it. And stay warm. I don't know what the weather's like in Vancouver, but I just feel like it's chilly. I don't know.
All right. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend, guys.
Thanks so much. Rash Madani at the 111th Grey Cup in Vancouver.
Yeah, BC place, though. So you can't have the, you know, the Grey Cups.
You like the Jonas Brothers,
The
though?
Grey Cup is more of a Grey Cup when there's a chance that there's snow.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's like iconic.
We're not going to get that at BC place, unfortunately.
Yes, Jonas Brothers.
Do I like the Jonas
performing.
Brothers? Honestly, I don't have much Jonas Brothers.
They kind of made a little
knowledge.
Resurgence there for a bit.
Yeah.
They came out with a newish album. And, you know, they're like, they're Taylor Swift there.
I feel with the whole Taylor Swift thing, like, I feel unbelievably out of the loop. Maybe the most
I've
ever
you were asking me questions about
ever
Taylor
felt
Swift
out of the loop.
The
I don't
show,
know anything about her.
You were like.
And the world revolves around her.
Yeah.
And
it's like you were dropped
backyard,
from Mars on here.
Yeah, when it's in your backyard, you feel real out of place. So yeah. I'm just going through it for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's a good learning lesson for you, Justin, about your what era are you in?
The problem is I'm going to go this whole time and probably not learn anything.
I'd give you a quick lesson. You don't
you could, but the Coles Notes is probably all I need.
Yes. Okay, we mentioned it right before we took Arash's line that it looks like the Blue Jays are hiring David Bell as VP of Baseball Ops and Assistant General Manager Shai Devee, saying that he had interviewed with the Jays before joining Cincinnati and before the Jays had hired Charlie. And it is the same David Bell that I pulled from some dark place in my mind.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, former manager now going up top. I'm sure there's some management experience for David Bell, but I guess another baseball mind joining the Blue Jays here in their efforts to make a splash this offseason.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We're going to have Frank Saravelli join us on the other side, but a quick question we'll pose to our viewers and our listeners. There's this one-of-one Paul Skeens rookie card that is going to be worth so much money. If it wasn't money, what was the one thing that you could be offered to give it up? The Pirates are offering like 30 years of season tickets and all this other good stuff. What would be the one thing that you'd be like, yeah, I'll take it. Is it Taylor Swift tickets? Because I'm in.
It might just be.
Send us at 590-590. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with Frank on the other side.
Hey, it's Matt Marchese.
And I'm Mike Fiuta.
We're discussing the top stories of the day across the NHL and the hockey world, weekdays at noon.
It's the Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan pregame, 30 minutes from the weekend. And we're going to chat with Frank Saravelli a little later tonight. It'll be Pittsburgh and Columbus. That's on next on Sportsnet, followed by Detroit Anaheim at 10 p.m. on Sportsnet. If you're looking for a little NBA action, we've got the Raptors and the Pistons in their NBA in-season
you
cup.
You keep going in-season. They want you to drop.
What's
the
it called now?
The Emirates NBA Cup.
Okay, well,
NBA Cup.
Emirates
you don't
can pay me to say it.
Shill for an airline.
We got Detroit and Toronto, 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 1. They're debuting their purple court.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be great. And then on Sportsnet West tonight, Nashville and Calgary, a 9 p.m. start. Let's bring in our buddy, Frank Saravelli of DailyFaceoff.com. Frank, how are we?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're better than the Pittsburgh Penguins, which is a good place to start because they're on next on Sportsnet.
It's a low bar.
Yeah. Well, I mean, sometimes that's how you feel at the end of a week. The plans for that team, everybody but Sid is available. We're going to start shipping stuff out. Like, did we think it was going to get to this point early November that a statement of that sort was declared and then actions were followed with Lars Eller? Like, how did we get here?
I would say any realist would think that that's a possibility. I mean, this is a team that has missed the playoffs 2 years in a row, hasn't won a round in 6 years, and I think has made one wrong step after another trying to chase its tail and remain competitive. I think the interesting thing about what you just said and potentially the way that you framed it, and this isn't critical, we're going to ship stuff out, but the idea isn't to now tear it down. If they are shipping pieces out, it's to try and find a different, better mix because they have made a commitment to Sidney Crosby, who didn't even begin his next contract yet, to try and remain as competitive as possible. So all of that is going to be really difficult because everything that they've done to this point has compounded essentially the spot that they're in.
Yeah, that's the most embarrassing thing for me. You're, what, 6 weeks removed from signing the sweetheart deal of all sweetheart deals involving maybe the most important person in this generation of the NHL, and you're saying, yeah, we're this is not, the mix isn't here. We failed you, and we were willing to do anything involving trading away some of your best friends that have been along for the ride. So let's talk about that potential reality. Like, Evgeny Malkin wasn't named in among those who are safe from everything. That's only Sid one of one. Like, is there a chance Gino could go out the door? It'd be hard to imagine you're bringing in something that helps you win, but maybe that's just lip service for Sidney Crosby and the marketplace. Like, could this involve a guy like Gino?
0.0% chance. If Sidney Crosby's in Pittsburgh, Evgeny Malkin will be there until Evgeny Malkin decides he doesn't want to play anymore. Those two are incredibly close and tight. And by the way, Malkin got off to the best start of his career this season, and he's actually played better since then, even though the numbers haven't been pretty, because he's also been asked to go up there and help, you know, be in a spot to get Sid going again. And so he's had some, it's not a difficult assignment, but he's done some heavy lifting this year to try and help this Penguins team. So not at all reflective of Malkin and the spot that he's been in with his game. Not part of it. And that's the other sort of misnomer about where the Penguins are at. You can throw up a flag outside of the arena and say, everyone for sale except 87, except there's a lot of players on the team that either have no move clauses or are frankly untradeable. Ricard Raquel, not tradable with the term left on his deal. Tristan Jarry in net, not tradable. Erik Karlsson, no move clause. Chris Letang, not tradable. Like, you look at some of the pieces that they have, and there's really nowhere to go except sit here and eat it.
What about young Drew O'Connor, Dartmouth Big Green graduate, 26 years old?
his reaction.
No, well, he's actually one of the very few pieces that they have that actually has any value.
That's
and I
guy.
Would say Jack St. Ivany on the blue line, who's got two more years at 775 as a classic number six defenseman, he has some value. Marcus Pedersen in the last year of his deal as a pending UFA, 4.0 and change million bucks. He has some value, but the list is short. And even when we're talking about value, so to speak, these aren't big, you know, ticket items that are going to suddenly restore the Pittsburgh Penguins to glory with what they bring back in return. And therein lies the problem.
Okay, so who was that declarative statement for? We're open for business. We want to bring pieces in. Like, who was that for if they actually can't do anything? Is that just to be like, hey, you know, we're doing something. We're working hard up here. Like, who does that satisfy if the truth is what you lay out?
I'm as flabbergasted as anyone else because I don't know the answer to that. The answer is for no one. Maybe the fan base, lip service to say, hey, we're trying to do something here. I mean, I think the real truth and crux of the issue is that Kyle Dubas and the work that he's done since he's arrived in Pittsburgh, he's only made things worse. The shine has worn off of this sparkling, you know, next up and coming general manager that's supposed to be the wizard that can snap his fingers and fix things. There's a reason why he got a mostly unprecedented deal as well in Pittsburgh as a general manager is because they knew Fenway Sports Group, the ownership team, knew how difficult of a job that this would be to try and turn this around and redo it on the fly. The problem is, since Kyle Dubas has gotten there, things have gotten worse and not better, and not by a wide margin.
As we mentioned, we've got the Penguins and the Blue Jackets up next on Sportsnet, kind of like a nightmare bowl of hockey teams, but you should still watch it. Because Tristan Jarry is making his return to the lineup after 2 weeks in the AHL, where he needed like a little bit of a reset. Can he afford to not have a stunning performance against Columbus tonight, a team that's below them in the standings? Not many are. And after so much time and effort put into Tristan Jarry and what his future is like, I feel like this is a pretty big spot for him tonight.
Well, it is. It's a chance to show that the work that he has put in the AHL and with their goaltending team led by John Elkin, that they can be better. He can be better and turn it around and fix his game. There is talent there. This is a guy that was highly thought of in the NHL a few seasons ago. Also had a pretty documented injury history at the time that Kyle Dubas came in, and within that first sort of 6 to 8 weeks of arriving there, he gets a contract that not only resembles Jack Campbell in terms of term and dollars, but also to start the deal has resembled a very frightening Jack Campbell type situation that played out in Edmonton, where he couldn't find his game and was banished to the AHL for a long period of time. So this is Tristan Jarry's sort of next opportunity to prove that he can continue to be an NHL goaltender, because his stats and the eye test haven't said that.
We're talking to Frank Saravelli, dailyfaceoff.com. 1,001 points for Connor McDavid last night was pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. I don't know where he's at in his career. Maybe he's approaching the turn, has made the turn. Doesn't really matter. He's in his 10th season, and he's on an unbelievable upward trajectory, and he can do some real special things here in the NHL, and that's obviously saying what's very obvious. If you had to set the over-under on his point total for his career when everything is said and done, Frank, where would you go?
Oh, man, isn't the – so if we're going to do a true Vegas line, I would set it at 2,196.5 points.
Yeah. Wow.
Does he get to 2,197 to just throw a cheesy last two digits on it? Point
Hockey
being,
loves those. Yeah.
Seems like a stone-cold mortal lock, provided that health and good fortune come his way, to get to 2,000 points and become the second – player ever to do that. He has done things in this league that, frankly, I wasn't sure that we'd ever see again. And we've run out of ways to describe it, because on a nightly basis, the greatness that has existed in his game appears to be so routine. I mean, even watch last night's game and understand and feel the vibe in Rogers' Place. Everyone's on the edge of their seat, and you could tell that he was just trying to will a point into the net because he can. And he has that sort of superpower when he's going on all cylinders to do that. There's so many ridiculous plays and not just that, but like things to draw back on over the course of his career that show how masterful he is at his craft as the most highly evolved player of all time. But to think about it from this perspective, he also has a sense of the moment. Think about this. At every, you know, sort of milestone opportunity for points, 100, 200, 300, 400, all the way through to 1,000 points, every single night that he's done it, he's had a multi-point night. And so, you know, even last night, you knew that if he was getting one, he was finding a way to get two. And it's sort of just happened like that for him in his career. And, you know, we then start to draw comparisons and what happens next and where does he stack up relative even to Sidney Crosby. And he did it 98 games faster than Sid, getting to 1,000. Yes, different scoring era, different everything. Now it's up to the team results and the championships to be included in that ultra elite category.
I saw a really great tweet, Courtney Thoreau on Twitter, to put McDavid's 1,000 points in 659 games into perspective. Auston Matthews, another generational talent, would need 340 points in the next 84 games to match that pace, which is over 4 points per game. So, you know, we obviously live in Toronto. We know how talented Auston Matthews is as a goal scorer, but like just looking at the 1,000 points in that short time, I thought it was an interesting perspective on Auston Matthews and just how good Connor McDavid is. It's a good opportunity to ask you about Auston Matthews next, because it's a sixth straight game that he's going to be out. And he's very secretive about his injuries. We know that. But like, I feel a little concerned. Six games, not a lot of information. I guess that's the world we live in with his injury concerns. But do we know anything more, or is this super precautionary so then he doesn't have to sit any more games for the rest of the season?
Yeah, it's super precautionary, and I can actually take you back to 1 week ago today when the Leafs were entering a back-to-back set. It was so up in the air as to whether or not he would play last weekend. It was basically a coin flip, 50-50, and they were waiting to determine his status until he walked into the team facility on Friday morning to say, am I going to play or am I not? And the Leafs were actually kind of holding their breath because they wanted him to sit out, because this is of the nagging injury variety, and they wanted to make sure that if and when he does come back to play, that it is 100% in the rearview mirror and won't be an issue for the remainder of the season. And he ended up walking in that day and saying, look, I can't go, I can't play, and so sat out that back-to-back set, and it's obviously lingered into this week, well into this week. The schedule has been fortunate from that perspective in that it hasn't been overly onerous. There hasn't been a ton on the slate. But the Leafs are internally feeling like, oh, this is a good thing that he has sat out this long, because it means that we know we'll nip it in the bud.
We're chatting with Frank Saravelli ahead of the weekend, full of some really great games. We're going to see Oilers and Leafs tomorrow night, but probably won't see Auston Matthews. I want to ask you about Connor Hellebuyck winning the Hart. Like, I know winning a goaltender winning the Hart obviously hasn't been done since Carey Price and 14-15, but this seems like a real conversation we should start maybe picturing ourselves having, the way that this Winnipeg Jets team has started and how much he's carried and, you know, been the, like, I guess the catalyst to that. Is there a chance that we see that record of never getting a goaltender to win the Hart kind of start to change for us?
Ailish, I have a really hard time with this one, and particularly with the Jets this year, because their offense has been so explosive. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't see that coming. I sat down with Kevin Cheveldayoff this week, and he didn't see that coming, but they haven't been as reliant, as good as Hellebuyck has been, and other world good as Hellebuyck has been. They haven't been as reliant on that this year. And I think the tough part about voting for a goaltender for Hart, and I've been the one to kind of raise that discussion. And in fact, I had Hellebuyck on my ballot recently. Mm-hmm. It's difficult, because if you truly are voting for the most valuable player on every team, your ballot almost every year would be five goalies, right? If you think about it from that perspective, because of the importance of the position. And so I do struggle with that on a holistic view, that you really have to transcend and be that much head and shoulders above everyone else on your team. And Hellebuyck is one of the few to actually enter into that conversation, but I don't know that he would generate league-wide support just yet. But I think it's still really early and has a chance, especially if their offense reverts and regresses a little bit back to the mean, where he could certainly be there. But to put his numbers in perspective too, Matt Larkin on Daily Faceoff wrote a great piece today just about the death of the 900 save percentage. Yeah. Like, we're seeing now save percentages dip so far below 900 that, you know, 900 is a really good number now. And if Hellebuck, you know, seemingly hovers in that 920 range, it just goes to show you how, you know, next level he's been.
Yeah, Hellebuck does have the numbers right now that Price had, 934 save percentage, a goals against average under two. That's what Sidney Crosby, that's what Carey Price finished with in 2015. I think he won two of every three starts, basically, on average. Of course, Hellebuck's 12-1. I mean, that's going to likely change in some ways. I mean, if he has a record like that, we might have to think about it. But you're right, Winnipeg's doing everything. They're getting amazing goaltending, but they're also blowing teams out more often than not. So Hellebuck definitely... Go ahead, Frank.
I was going to say, let me throw something else at you. I don't know that because of McDavid and the 1,000 points that Andrei Vasilevsky shattering a 61-year-old record yesterday, becoming the fastest goalie ever to get to 300 wins, held by Jacques Plante. Like, I don't know that that's gotten enough love and attention, because, you know, when it's all said and done, like, you could potentially make the argument that Vasilevsky, Kevin Cheveldayoff called Hellebuck the best goalie of our time right now, but where would Vasilevsky fit into that conversation, and where ultimately will he end up in his career?
Both probably Hall of Famers. Shesterkin maybe on a Hall of Fame path. Bobrovsky likely going to the Hall of Fame. There are a lot of Hall of Fame goaltenders currently playing in the NHL, despite sub
Anthony
900
Stolarz.
Being the average. And Stolarz, well on his way. Got to ask you about Wednesday night. Three video reviews between
terrible.
The Maple Leafs and Capitals. And clearly, like, you're just watching that game. You're watching the reviews. And it's just plainly obvious that this league does not run in the same way other legitimate sports leagues and entities do, right? Like, in tennis, you know exactly where the ball lands with a split second. With Matthew Knies, we have no idea where that high stick actually came from, whether it should have been a goal or not. You're leaning on a call made on the ice in a split second rather than maybe looking at the video review. And again, it's not to say that they should or shouldn't have been. I guess the rule book was called as such. But does a night like that, like, kind of reinforce that maybe diving a little deeper into what is and isn't a goal is something the NHL should certainly invest their time and resources in?
Well, I think they are, first and foremost. And I think if you were to inject truth serum into the hockey operations department, they're probably equally as frustrated with this as anyone else. And I want to take you back to the GM meeting 10 years ago. I was there, and Gary Bettman issued a stern warning to the manager saying, you are opening Pandora's box. And if you go through with this, that's fine. Just understand that we don't necessarily know all the repercussions that come with it next. And even Colin Campbell, one day after being inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame this week, was saying, how perfect do we want to make this? You know, how deep of a rabbit hole do we want to go down? And I think everyone has kind of thrown their arms up and said, well, it's not great as it is. I think we all understand that, but we have to then drastically rewrite our rule book. By the letter of the law, these goals that were, you know, called back are, that's the correct call by the rule book. But I think we can all agree watching it that none of this is in the spirit of the game. Like, the bump on the way through the crease from Nick Dowd, like, that to me is not enough of a threshold for goalie interference. You look at Joe Woll, his body barely moves, his stick stays in the same position, and he's unhindered in dropping to make the save, which he couldn't see anyway because of the traffic in front of him. And, you know, even something as simple as the penalty in front as well. I mean, look, there's a million things to go back and look through, but I don't think that the Zapruder-like world that we've entered into now, looking for hanging skate blades in the air on offside video reviews, none of this to me is in the spirit of the game. This is not what we all grew up watching and knowing, and none of it passes the smell test or the gut test of the way this game should be played and called.
Mic drop. I loved it, Frank. Were you here for the Hall of Fame induction this week?
I was.
I guess our phones aren't working for an invite to say hello.
They work both ways. I didn't
know you were going to be here, Frank. Oh, well, There's always next trip. Well, enjoy your weekend, Frank. We appreciate you joining us on a Friday night. We'll chat next week.
See you guys.
Bye. Frank Cervelli of DailyFaceoff.com.
Okay.
Okay, big weekend, big night. Lots to go through, so let's get going. I want to show the newest Raptors jerseys. Those are released today. I think there's some mixed reviews. It is Vince Carter as a dinosaur through the legs dunking on a NBA jersey that they will wear in professional basketball games.
Yeah, you sound a lot of negative connotations or tones
like
in this
them.
Show. So you really
like them.
Then why do you present it like
because
that?
Because I'm presenting it as the social media tone that I'm reading online. Live a little, folks. It's not that serious. It's a cool jersey, and like whatever. How many times are you gonna wear it? I think it's cool. I think there's probably some little features I might have changed, but I think it's a nice idea.
Yeah, I mean, I'm done getting upset about what professional athletes are going to wear in professional sporting events. Is it my favorite thing ever? Am I going to rush to get one? No. Is it cool?
I rushed to buy the new purple ones that they bought, that they came out with this year.
I prefer those, but
those are
better. That's great.
The one that we got, the purple one with the black back, I think those are like some of the best jerseys that the Raptors have ever worn.
And it's because it's what they used to wear. Like, it's always what came before is always a little bit better.
It's kind of fun.
It kind of screams, hey, this is our practice jersey a little bit. You wear it a couple times, it's not going to offend at least me.
You know what?
I was going to say anyone, it's going to offend people. It's not going to offend me.
It's kind of mid, but that's okay.
So, see the Memphis ones? They're beautiful.
No.
You see those?
I'll have to look it up.
Check them out.
Okay, so check that off the list. Okay, let's talk about some best bets for tonight and look ahead at the weekend. I'm going to give the Pittsburgh Penguins a boost of positivity because that was a tough interview about sad state of their franchise. Sidney Crosby is 2 goals away from 600 on his career. I say he does it tonight. He gets both goals against the Columbus Blue Jackets, 11-1. He also knows the moment, just like McDavid.
Yep.
I think he can show up big, put 2 in the net against a team that is worse than them. And
yeah, he's beat up on Columbus historically too.
Yeah, and he knows like this team is in a bad state. They're selling everyone off. Maybe he's got a little prove it attitude, and he puts the team on his back. 2
Playing
plus
with
goals.
Gino too, maybe, as Frank outlined.
There you go. 11-1.
In season. Oh, I just did. In season.
See?
NBA Cup continues tonight.
I don't know. I just forget what it's called.
Pistons and Raptors. Pistons won their first game. Raptors didn't, of course. So I think maybe the Pistons young team, hey, we're in this thing. We're in this division. We could maybe make something of this tournament.
Good for them.
I like the Pistons as short favorites on the road in Toronto. They're going to get used to that purple court pretty quick. And then I'm fading the old heavyweight champions in a parlay. Mm. Fade the old men parlay, it's called.
The old man parlay.
Fade the old men. Because Jake Paul is going to beat Mike Tyson tonight. But I think he's going to carry Mike Tyson. I think he's going to be like, is it really cool if you're Jake Paul?
Yeah, I got the most of that Netflix subscription, make it go.
And runtime, right? Like, they're probably, hey, can we make sure we don't embarrass Mike Tyson because he agreed to make me even richer than I am? So I think Jake Paul is going to beat Mike Tyson by decision plus 275. And then John Jones, you know, Stipe Miocic's not the oldest guy in the world, but John Jones is the younger guy, the better guy. It's set up for him to win and have a moment in New York City this weekend at UFC 309. Mm. I think he's going to beat Stipe Miocic by KO, plus 120 parlays, plus 725. The young lions get over the very old former heavyweights.
And that UFC 309 tomorrow night at MSG. Prelims will be on Sportsnet 360 starting at 8 p.m. Pay-per-view available for purchase on Sportsnet Plus. Big night, big two nights of fighting.
Which one are you more interested in?
UFC 309.
Really?
But I'm going to watch tonight.
You're not a sicko like everybody else. That's
I'm
going
to watch tonight. But like, I'm not, to be honest. You say you don't know much about Taylor Swift. That's me and the whole Paul brother. I'm not into that stuff.
Yeah, I definitely. I mean, their foray into boxing has made it so that I know something about them.
I just am not into it.
Mike Tyson doing Mike Tyson
but
things
like
is going to be interesting. So you got to
watch. I'm going
to
watch both. And the Leafs and Oilers tomorrow night. We get a lot of good viewing. But we are talking about Jake Paul and Mike Tyson. And we talked about Paul Skeens. Quickly, I want to tell this story. That he's got a rookie card that's up for, there's one of them being produced.
A one-of-one card, and basically the Pirates want it desperately.
A one-of-one special edition rookie card that's got a patch on it. The Pirates have offered this. If you find it, listen up. The Pirates have offered, if you give them the card.
Yeah.
2 Pirates season tickets behind home plate for the next 30 years, a softball game for 30 people at PNC Park, and coaching from Pirates alumni, and a whole bunch of other things. Don't do it. keep the card, sell it, like the Shohei Ohtani thing. Like, you could literally make millions of dollars.
Okay. I'll keep it if I get it. And a lot of Paul talk here. Your favorite Paul ever?
DJ Pauly D.
That's your favorite Paul?
Yeah.
Give me Paul Wall over DJ Pauly D.
Paul Bissonnette, going to be on Hockey Night Canada
tomorrow. Paul Jones?
You know, my favorite Paul is Paul Martini. Yes. I hope they're watching.
Okay. Paul Henderson, biggest goal in
Paul Cotter,
sports history.
Paul Kariya. All right.
Love Paul.
Say hi to your Pauls this weekend. Have a great weekend.